The great state of Tennessee can boast three U.S. presidents. It can boast that three U.S. presidents have called this state their home: Andrew Jackson, James K. Polk, and Andrew Johnson. Andrew Jackson became our seventh president in 1829. He served two terms. Polk became the 11th president in 1845. He just served one term. And Johnson was Abraham Lincoln's vice president and succeeded Lincoln in 1865 as the 17th president, fulfilling Lincoln's unexpired term. Johnson, however, failed to win the nomination of his party at the convention to run for re-election. In the 25 years that I have lived in Tennessee, I have learned it's best just not to talk about Andrew Johnson. We just don't talk about him. Don't mention Johnson. Jackson, of the three, is unique in that he has had the rare distinction of having his face on our currency, the $20 bill. But as you may recall, however, back in April, the Secretary of the Treasury announced that President Jackson will soon be removed from the 20 and replaced with Harriet Tubman. Now, I personally have no problem with this plan. It's just money. And when the time comes, if you don't like your Harriet Tubman $20 bills, give them to me. I'll take them. That's fine. Not surprisingly, a lot of people were unhappy with this announcement. And some of those arguments for retaining Jackson on the 20 are, well, some say, we only put presidents on our money. Nope, not true. Benjamin Franklin is on the $100 bill. If you don't like your Benjamin Franklin money, again, give it to me. Some argue that Andrew Jackson has always been on the $20 bill. That's not true. Grover Cleveland was on the 20 until 1928, when Jackson kicked him off. Cleveland's face migrated to another bill. And if you happen to have one of those in your pocket, drop it in the offering plate. It's the $1,000 bill. It is something of a mystery as to why Jackson is on currency at all, seeing that as president, he actively opposed paper money issued by a central bank. And while we're on this subject of paper money, I have something I want to get off my chest. If there's one thing that weirds me out, it's that disembodied eyeball floating on top of a pyramid on the back of the $1 bill. It's a nightmare. I don't know whose idea that was. Many people want to know why Harriet Tubman is replacing Andrew Jackson. What did she do? Well, the real question should be, what didn't she do? Harriet Tubman was born into slavery in Maryland around 1822. She escaped to Philadelphia when she was about 27, but then returned into the South more than a dozen times to lead runaway slaves to freedom. Slave owners offered bounties of thousands of dollars for her capture. During the Civil War, she led a team of Union soldiers into Beaufort, South Carolina, to free slaves. Later in life, she worked for women's suffrage alongside Susan B. Anthony and others. She died in 1913. The reason I like this change on the currency is that it will serve as an ongoing reminder that our nation's past is a rich tapestry of people and events. The decision as to whose face goes on our currency should not be taken lightly. The faces on our money should reflect our nation's values, and chief among those is that all people are indeed created equal. The Gospel of Luke, in our reading for today, once again addresses the issue of money. But this time, he's not talking about wealth or riches, but he's actually talking about physical currency, like the coins that we carry around in our pockets. The discussion of money in Luke has been brought up by those who oppose Jesus and those who want to see him eliminated. Jesus is presently in Jerusalem, and he spends his days teaching within the temple. Now, allow me a couple minutes to describe the temple layout. It's important because we'll be living with Jesus here for a couple of weeks of sermons. The temple is not just a room like this. The temple is a walled compound, a large campus. And at the center of this campus is a small building which was known as the Holy of Holies. And that is where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. It was regarded as God's throne on earth. One's status determined how close one could get to the Holy of Holies. Priests were the only ones allowed inside that building. Outside of the Holy of Holies was an area known as the Court of Israel, and Jewish men were allowed into the Court of Israel. Beyond the Court of Israel was the Court of Women, and women, of course, Jewish women were allowed into that area. And then along the outer wall and the perimeter of the compound was the Court of Gentiles, and anyone could go into the Court of Gentiles. And this is probably where Jesus set up shop to teach. There was a covered walkway around the interior of the wall, a portico. And I can imagine that Jesus would find a shady place there to sit and teach the people. It was also in the Court of Gentiles that one would find those people selling animals for sacrifices and exchanging money. 50 years after Jesus, as Luke is teaching his congregation about Jesus, no doubt there was a recurring question among the people. I'm sure they asked Luke on many occasions, if Jesus was good, then why was he executed? And this is a logical question. And in this section of the gospel where we are right now, Luke is building the case for Jesus' execution. He is exploring the several reasons that the authorities had to oppose Jesus and to want him dead. Now, last week, we examined how Jesus challenged the economic relationship between the chief priest and those selling things in the temple. And by driving out those vendors, Jesus angered the temple authorities. In today's reading, the chief priest sends spies to Jesus. And these spies, they pretend to be honest or righteous, but their mission is to entrap Jesus with his own words. They're looking for a valid reason to turn Jesus over to the Roman authorities. In our reading today, these spies, no doubt, approach Jesus in the courtyard of the temple where he's teaching. And Jesus is surrounded by people listening to him. And these spies offer up wonderful words of flattery, saying, "Teacher, Rabbi, we know that you are right in what you say and teach, and you show deference to no one, but you teach the way of God in accordance with truth." Those are pretty flattering words. But then they switch gears, they go nuclear, and they ask that question. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to the emperor or not? And this is a volatile question. It is also a trap. If Jesus answers that it is not lawful to pay taxes, then he would be guilty of treason against Rome. The correct answer is, of course, that it is legal to pay taxes to Rome. After all, Rome is the governing authority in the land. To reject Roman taxes would be rebellious and probably fatal. However, 30 years earlier, a leader of the Jewish rebellion against Rome, a man named Judas of Galilee, not that Judas, a different Judas, he declared that Roman taxes were indeed illegal. And his argument was that Israel had been given to the Jews by God and that the land belonged to God. Paying taxes to anyone other than God, such as the Romans, was an act of sacrilege. And this viewpoint was very popular among the Jews. If Jesus had answered that the taxes were legal, he would have then alienated many of the Jewish people, and they may have turned against him. The question is a trap. There's no right, no good answer to it. But Jesus recognizes this trap for what it is, and so instead of answering the question, he asks that someone show him a coin. And he says to the crowd, "Whose head and whose title do you find on this coin?" Well, it's obvious. Everybody knows. They don't even have to look at it that it is the face of the Roman emperor, Tiberius Caesar. So Jesus says to the crowd, "Then give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's." I don't have to tell you how brilliant that answer is. The spies ambush Jesus with their gotcha question about taxes, and Jesus deftly lifts the conversation to a higher level, to a place that is not about money or taxes or rulers, but instead this place is about belonging. When Jesus asks whose image is on the coin, everyone knows it's the emperor. But if the emperor's image is on the coin, it can go to the emperor. But to God, however, one gives those things that belong to God. So, the next question is, what belongs to God? And the answer is, those things that have God's image on them. All right? So what has God's image on it? And the answer is, we do. Every Jew there would know that humankind is made in the image of God. Genesis chapter 1. So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Your money, it can go to the emperor, but you belong to God. And remember that Jesus asked whose head and whose title were on the coin. And on the coin, you have the silhouette of the emperor and the title around the edge, which says, "Son of the Divine Augustus." His father was Augustus. And the claim of the Roman emperor was that Roman emperors were gods. And yet, he was a man. And as a man, he's made in the image of the true God. So that emperor to whom you pay taxes, Jesus is saying, ultimately, he too belongs to God. So here, in this place, in the temple, in the darkness of this intended violence, Jesus rises above the chaos and he offers a gift. It is a gift of freedom. Just as in the process of creation, God brought order to chaos, Jesus brings order to chaos and light to darkness. As John will write in his gospel, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. You need not be concerned with the affairs of this world, with the taxes, the emperor, the chief priests, the scribes, or the spies. For you, Jesus says, are free to rise above that and to place your trust with God, your full allegiance with God. God created you, God marked you, and God claims you as his own. Your life does not need to consist of your efforts to please God, to curry his favor, for you are already there. For those Jews of Jesus' day who are anxious about keeping the law, and for us today who worry about if we're good enough for God, Jesus says, you belong. This message of Jesus isn't a message of hope. It isn't a message of promise. It's a reality. Those things are here. Whether you are a president or whether you are a slave, Jesus calls us to live our lives each day confident that we do belong to God. Wake up each day knowing that we are God's. Go to work, spend our day, live with the blessed assurance that we are God's. The anxiety of whether or not God loves us is taken off the table. And that is the gift of freedom. For this gift, and for so much more, we can be truly thankful. Amen.